Joe, how you doing? You're back.
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very good. Joe, tonight we're going to talk about the militarization of the police and black crime. Is it a dialectic that's being played out here? Or what's the bigger issue, or the two legitimate issues that both sides tend to ignore when they're yelling at each other, fighting at each other, not listening to each other? Obviously, there is a problem with black crime and other social problems that affect the black community and the society at large, but there's a particular problem in the black community with high crime rates, particularly among males. But there is also a problem with police brutality and the militarization of the police and what militarization has played a part in that. So how do you want to address this?
Well, I just wanted to start out by saying that I agree with the premise that it can be just seen as a deliberate dialectic. And by that, I mean that they have maneuvered the so-called African-American into a position whereby violence and drug use, crime, are basically epidemic. The way the media portrays the problem, and in many cases just quite out, flat out accurately, terrifies basically the other ethnicities. And so you've got then the response of they accept the militarization of police, thinking that this is how they're being defended against black crime. I'll just give you a little example. Where I live, I think the only African American within 20 miles is Oprah Winfrey. So we don't have much black crime here, but the police is being militarized. And today in the newspaper, they had a picture of what I would refer to as a fascist mobile. I mean, this thing is as big as a Greyhound bus. And it is just completely militarized. In other words, the gigantic tires, a battering ram on the front. It has a porthole on the top so that SWAT members can, jump on top of people, I guess, from the top of the bus. But, I mean, it's just completely a militarized vehicle. This would be something you'd see in the Middle East warfare. And it was on display, and they were going to be giving a demonstration to the public of canine prowess. And I'm not kidding. This was the bus was there on the front page. They had some people kind of smiling, sitting on it. And then they were going to show off to the public how the German Shepherd police dogs can tackle people and bring them to the ground. And this was going to be something that, the population would embrace and think this was a tremendous thing, because remember, the police are there to protect us, not to enslave us. So I think that's all hooey. It's completely clear to me that they are using the meme of the of black crime basically as a parallel to the overseas Muslim terrorist boogeyman. Mm-hmm. And so the public is easily manipulated because the media portrays these images. And they also promote the fact. I don't know what exactly the statistics are. I don't have them. I've tried to get those today. I couldn't find really anything good on this. But I know they're asymmetric. I know that there's if I had to guess, I would say it'd be between 10 and 100 times more black on white crime than the opposite. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, you get to see in the media the Ku Klux Klan and the Nazis all the time marching. And so I think both sides are being manipulated for the purpose of enslavement. Okay. I mean, that's just how I see it, Tim. Well, mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, there is a real problem with high crime rates among black people, particularly men. So you can also look at it as a sexual thing, a sex thing. It's I think it's black population is roughly 13% of the population. I think 27% of arrests are black. And if you discount from men are less than 6%, or about 6% black men, about 6% of the U.S. population. And they're responsible for a vast majority of arrest. And they're the ones that are being arrested. Now you could say it's racism and these things like this, but that account for the disproportionate arrest rates. And if you look at violent crime like rape and murder, these things, it's astronomically high. And you're talking about a 10-to-1 ratio, roughly, black on white crime. So it is a serious problem. But it is important to remember that the problems in the black community weren't totally a natural or organic creation. We've talked in the past to how the black community itself was specifically targeted by the U.S. government, by the think tanks, by the CIA throughout the years. The cultural agenda, the movies, the black exploitation films promoting pathological criminal behavior, the denigration of the black male, courtesy of Ms. Magazine. Promoting black feminism and these things, and through arrest, drug arrest, and crime, and high incarceration rates, men have been taken out of the black family, and through the cultural agenda, they've made sure that a large portion, if not a majority, of young black men aren't capable of being responsible fathers, and that's borne out in the illegitimacy rates, high rates of what used to be called bastardy, rates over nationwide over 70% for the black community, and in the neighborhoods it's probably closer to 90-95%. So you have the complete meltdown of the family, and with that you have all the pathologies that come from that, one of which is high crime rates. So it's not surprising, but this wasn't something that just came about, because going into the 1960s, all the indices for blacks in the United States were improving. Until the 1960s, and the reversal kicked in. And that coincided, with the 1960s cultural upheavals, the Cultural Revolution, the creation of the drug culture, again, which wasn't something that was organic or natural. It was created by the intelligence agencies and their think tanks and their agents in the media, Hollywood, and these things. So at the same time, to address the cultural upheaval of the 60s, the riots and such, you had the development of the SWAT team. And that, of course, you've discussed with others, with Jan Ervin and such, the Watts riots, how these things weren't completely, these things were engineered, more or less.
Sure.
And the development of the SWAT team was a reaction to the Watts riots in Los Angeles. And that was Daryl Gates. He came up with the idea, and he was first shut down, but then the next police chief approved the idea. And so in response to the riots, I was expected to get worse in the 70s. It didn't, of course. But also the development of domestic terrorist organizations like the Sinhalese Liberation Army. Well, I think you and I both discussed how the SLA, Sinhalese Liberation Army, was an intelligence operation.
Yeah.
Grew out of Vacaville, which is MKUltra, these things. Again, so they're creating the mayhem and the fear to justify the creation of these paramilitary operations. And I think in 1970, there was one SWAT team in the nation. By 1975, there was 500. And it really proliferated in the 1980s and 90s with the explosion of the drug war under the Reagan administration and the policy of giving surplus military equipment to local police departments to support the war on drugs, such as law enforcement in general.
I just wanted to interject one thing because I don't want to, hopefully it's interesting. So with the SLA, you had, to me, that was when the SWAT team really got going. I know there'd been some kind of militarized training of police before the SLA.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in LA during that episode, during the shootout, where, you know, you have this, you know, like the whole block got set on fire. If you ever see a YouTube video, it's just spectacular. And the point I wanted to make is that immediately after, they started, you had people saying, we're outgunned. The police are being outgunned. The SLA had better weapons. There was this idea that the police just, you know, weren't well armed enough. And this was part of the storyline that was being given to the public
mm-hmm.
about, you know, we've got to like defend ourselves. And you have to remember that this was at the same time that they released a story. I mean, it was, as far as I can tell, it's like literally just rat-a-tat-tat, that Sin Quay, who was the leader of the SLA, who was mm-hmm. a black guy, had raped Patty Hearst.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know if you recall this, but that was actually in play. Then after her indoctrination, she had then been brainwashed after having forced to have sex with this guy. Then she's brainwashed, and the next thing you know, she's like Tanya robbing banks, mm-hmm. right? So this was the context of the whole SLA, is the police are outgunned and the black guys are raping Patty Hearst. And I think that the dialectic was already in play.
Yeah,
you know, because you have to
think about
how the cops certainly were apprised that the SLA was a CIA cutout, right? I mean, how could they have not known that?
And the LAPD has always been infiltrated with CIA.
So. Well, of course. I mean, it's a cesspool of the CIA, and you know, and so you would have to at least assume. I mean, it's a plausible conjecture, for God's sakes. They knew all this. So why the big explosion? What was this all about? What are they doing? Well, it's theater. It's propaganda. And so then when when it comes out that Sin Quay had raped Patty, this just was like, you know, it turned out that the whole thing was a reality TV show, whereby, you know, the movie, the blaxploitation film, then leaks out into the real world and becomes just exactly, a kind of a terror-based mind control element, because it's not even in the theaters anymore. You know, you don't have Shaft and all of the black exploitation. You've got Sin Quay. He's in your street. So I just wanted to point that out, is that in terms of the dialectic, you know, it's in my opinion, it's been in play. The militarization and black violence have always been presented basically as a combination to the public in order to prepare them for the militarization of the police that is necessary for hard-edged slavery.
Yeah, and that, of course, that whole leaking out of the Sin Quay raping Patty Hearst, that plays the sexual angle, so exploiting white fear. At the same time, it plays towards perhaps the desire of the black community for getting the white girl.
Well, it does everything that the secret society wants. I mean,
yeah.
And now bear in mind something. One thing at the time, I just couldn't make any sense of this. Why did they even release that detail?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did they need to do that? I mean, this was something that you'd think that the Hearst family would want to, you know, keep quiet. It's not something, you know, you'd want Patty to bear the burden of. I mean, why was that even a news story? Why wasn't that covered with privacy? But instead, it just became basically something that everyone was talking about around the water coolers at work.
And that's what they want happening, because that's going to be. Yep. Yeah. It's interesting because, of course, Patty Hearst, the granddaughter of William Randolph Hearst, captain of yellow journalism.
Yeah.
Otherwise, fake news.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not, you know, it's the irony is obvious there. It's funny, at least from that standpoint. They leaked this out. Now, there was a TV show, as you saw, because the shootout was, everyone was there to report on it. Of course, the development of SWAT team became popular. Popular culture soon kicked in because you had Aaron Spelling producing SWAT for television.
Right. I mean,
with the famous theme song.
Then the meme goes back into the theater. You know.
Yeah, and toys. They had SWAT toys. I remember in grade school at the time, kids had SWAT lunchboxes, and pretty soon everyone's becoming used to this militarized police. Now, it's funny because it was introduced to the idea that the SWAT team, and it was for the maybe the first decade, couple decades, these were units were used sparingly. But then in the 90s, because there's only so many terrorists out there, domestic terrorists and radical groups you can have shootouts with. You have all this equipment and all this money being spent, budgets and these things, and there's nothing for them to do. So they started using for routine law enforcement, serving warrants. Just recently, organic milk farms have been raided by SWAT teams.
I know one. Because I drink raw milk. It's the only kind of real milk I drink. And this is an absolute fact. My raw milk producer has been, the police have come in, and when they did, it was with the SWAT team. They use you had mentioned the Latin phrase that I don't know, but it's the idea that you don't keep standing armies in America. Was it
Posse comitatus?
Comitatus. Thank you. Well, I mean, to me, this is completely in violation of that principle. Just 100%. Because when you militarize the police, when you have basically military type equipment, then you have a standing army. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And so the citizen has been, because of the media, because they've been slowly indoctrinated into seeing this as a positive thing, haven't noticed that, well, gee whiz, we've been enslaved while we weren't looking.
Yeah, there was a case down in Arizona where the gentleman actually was he was an Army veteran, but his house was raided. It was a no-knock raid. Apparently his brother had been involved in drug dealing, but he wasn't. He had a wife and kid. So they went in his house, raided it, no-knock, and he got his wife and kid, put them in a closet, and he grabbed his rifle, he had it on safety. And as the troops came storming through, one tripped over another and fired his weapon, and they just unloaded like 50 bullets into this guy, killing him. His safety was on, so he knew better.
Theirs wasn't.
Yeah. Turns out there's nothing in the house. He was like working a graveyard shift at some mine. He was a hardworking guy. He wasn't involved in drug dealing. He just probably just had the wrong last name, wrong neighborhood. If you look, they have a film of it. And the sheriff is doing this. It's I guess it's some sort of multi-jurisdictional task force or something in the drug war. They look like Marines or soldiers in Fallujah or something. You couldn't distinguish them from soldiers. In fact, I would say soldiers are probably better trained in these situations than the police are. And at the end of the day, they said, "Oh, sorry, just made a mistake." And I don't think anyone who stormed in that house, under a false pretenses, a false warrant, no knock, were ever penalized or disciplined, much less disciplined. The man is dead.
Yeah. And I mean, I think episodes like that are just going to become more and more common. In fact, I think they're actually going to provoke them because it's a way of indoctrinating us to a new level of and a new kind of policing. I mean, this is really quite interesting to me in that you've had a situation, Tim, where the police have been militarized, right? I mean, just look at the uniforms and the outfits and the equipment they use, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is just ubiquitous. The raw milk guy suspected of whatever, when the police come, they bring in the SWAT team.
Yeah.
When you have in our situation where if they think someone is basically a drug dealer, it's never the police it's always the SWAT team. The SWAT team now is the police. It basically, people are just used to it. Well, how did this happen? Where was democracy? Was this something the people wanted? You know, when you look at these guys with their, they what I would call like a Ninja Turtle outfit, where they've got giant vests and a helmet that looks like something would be worn in warfare and automatic weapons, and they're completely armored up. Is that really something you want in your world?
Yeah.
Did I get to vote on this? So this is, And what they've done is they sell the idea of you know, the violence. And that's why so black violence is so useful to the CIA media. You know, when I think of the New York Times and Fox, CNN, I mean, to me, it's just, it is the secret society manipulating the public. I mean, this is what you have. So they have black crime, and it's just a perfect device to get us to accept their onset of a militarized police that is involved in you know, slavery, right? Mm-hmm. Controlling slaves. Okay, so the black crime has been developed, but the problem is that they have shattered the social fabric of the African-American community to such an extent that they don't really need to goad them much at this point. I mean, drug sales is the way that, you know, so much of wealth acquisition occurs inside these really poor communities. And violence has been promoted as heroic, right, to these kids. I mean, listen to the rap music.
Yeah.
You know, just listen to the constant reinforcement of, you know, blew them away. And it's just that it's heroic, that it's almost culturally identifiable to us, right, as young black men in America that were violent. You know, that's just, it's that graphic, it's that clear cut. But the problem is, how do you respond to it? Because the people who are engaged in this, the guys who have been victims of rap music and no education and no parenting, you can't really reach them with rational discord. You can't go, guys, can I talk to you? I really want to explain how you've been manipulated now that you're on a bad path. Because they defend their identity themselves. You see, they have taken on the role of their oppressors.
Yeah, yeah.
They promote this culture as being basically heroic and fun. And so when you try to engage them that this has been something that they've been led off a cliff with, they resist it. And basically, you have to be careful they don't shoot you, because they would think, oh, well, this is a, you know, variation of like racist you know, Nazi or Ku Klux Klan. And so now you've got, you know, the latest structure is where they've got Black Lives Matter versus the American Nazi Party.
Yeah.
And they're trying to push, I can see they're trying to push the alt-right into this dialectic more and more, right? You can see this, that the alt-right is being set up as basically a white racist, black hating, violence on black kind of thing. And Black Lives Matter is opposed to them and also to the police, right? You have these videos now. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many of them you've seen, but they're everywhere where you've got police with inappropriate violence against African-American males, right? Mm-hmm. They're on YouTube, just millions of them. They get rid of intellectual discourse about the nature of the Holocaust. That's too controversial, but they're perfectly fine showing, you know, an African-American male being beaten to death by, you know, a group of cops.
Yes. Or they won't talk about how many black men are killed by other black men.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't fit the narrative.
Black lives don't matter unless they happen to be good propaganda devices.
Yeah, you know? Make some
and so
political point out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The drug wars, of course, was a big impetus for this, because that was when the Reagan administration started floating the idea of getting military support. And from what I understand, the military itself, brass, was reluctant. So they're more mindful of this than many of the police. But the police are hungry for funds. A lot of the equipment you cite, like that big monster of, you know, truck or vehicle you
cite. The fascist mobile. The
fascist mobile. Yeah. It was probably funded by DHS grants.
You know? It was.
Yeah.
It was. In other words, they offer these things to local police departments. And you have to basically, they give you a timeline. If you want, you got to immediately come in. And then there are always strings attached to the thing. But the police, because, you know, they go, well, gee, we need a fascist mobile because, you know, the city next door has one. So we've got to get ours.
Yeah.
and so everyone ratchets up the kind of the militarization of the police. I don't think at a local level, I don't think, you know, that the cops at that level are really, you know, basically indoctrinated. I know some are. I've actually seen some, articles that there is training of the police, and some of them cite, though I don't have the evidence, you know, to understand this, but they cite that foreign training comes in to help the police learn how to basically be more militaristic.
I wonder who.
Israel as, yes. As a country that evidently has some training. Now, I cite it because I've read it, but I actually haven't seen this, but it wouldn't surprise me. This is one of these situations where one thing you can do is ask that the citizenry be better than the government, than the secret society. I mean, dialogue has to be created with Black Lives Matter and with Antifada and with, you know, because I know most of these organizations would be at the top. They'd be completely controlled by Soros and different elements of the secret society. But at a human level, I think there is still some communication that's possible. And you just have to get information into these groups. And I would also say into the alt-right, too, into, you know, the American Nazis and, you know, the if there is any, like, Ku Klux Klan that aren't CIA members, if there aren't. Okay. To say, look, you're just being taken off a cliff. You're being basically set up as a gladiatorial pit combatant. And, what you think is like your cultural meme is just basically, it's just the outfit that you're being dressed up in to put you in the gladiatorial pit so they can watch you slaughter each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is the poor white kind of, if you look at the SES you can just sense it from the kind of their use of language and things of like the whites and the some of the alt-right guys and the white nationalists and these guys, you know, they're not highly educated. They are definitely financially downtrodden. Mm-hmm. No question. They're part, we talked about how the wealth and the health of the white race in America is on decline. These are the avant-garde of the decline, you know? And so they're very upset. But to basically set up a situation where they're in opposition to Black Lives Matter or Antifada, whatever that organization is, it's the wrong enemy. You know, this is manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be, told, wait a second, you've been manipulated into this structure and into this violence. Like at Charlotte, where you had the Confederate statues of the Confederate heroes were being basically taken away. And so then this became an issue. And then you had the bizarre event, which I think was manipulated. And it just, you can see in that instance, Tim, you can really see the meme we're talking about. You know, you can see that the one group has been manipulated. The blacks have been manipulated, and the winner is the police departments because they're going to be given bigger budgets. And the population who sees this, right, they see these pictures and images, they go, gee, I wish we had a big fascist mobile, and I wish we had more cops with ninja turtle outfits on and machine guns and things. I'm just going to feel a lot better. You know,
well, so it's self-perpetuating because the moment you get federal dollars, DHS grants, which is all New World Order money, it's all monetized debt, so it's endless. You're going to have an industry that caters to it and lobbies because you have all this money, so all of a sudden industry is going to produce. You have a sort of a militarized police industrial complex, supplying all the goodies, whether it's barbed wire, tasers, body armor, Bearcats, vehicles, uniforms, what have you. Neat little weaponry that you can go to trade shows and see these things, and the companies will have them out on display, and purchasers for local police departments will show up and they'll wine and dine them and probably supply prostitutes like they do at all conventions. But these things, again, once the dollars roll in, there's an industry, that can then create lobbyists, the same way that the military industrial complex works, just maybe a lot smaller, but it's the same principle. I think $5 billion since the 1990s have been given to local police departments from the Pentagon, surplus military equipment. And there's a lot of surplus military equipment because the way the defense budget works, with $9 trillion gone missing.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous.
So much is produced. That what doesn't break or what they don't leave behind in some desert in some god-awful country that we invaded, they'll sell it back. And that's one way the empire comes home, because the equipment comes back home. And we're seeing that with this 1033 program.
Yeah, but you see, I just think this is absolutely unconstitutional. I mean, we are not supposed to maintain standing armies. What does the expression mean? Well, if you are using basically completely outfitted with weapons and technology that are used by armies in warfare, then you are no longer a police department. You see what I mean? It's just completely self-definitional. Once you take in the military equipment, then you are in breach of the Constitution.
And in many cases, like the infamous Waco incident, also Ruby Ridge massacre the year before, authorities lied to get military involvement in that, and there's no accountability for that line. That's a crime. They claim there's drug dealing going on at Waco. There wasn't. That justified the use of the special forces there. And you had Joint Task Force 6, I think, at Waco, where they brought in all the military hardware to surround that area. And what I'm surprised by, whenever these reactions, these things, both of these standoffs were completely avoidable just by normal police methods. Civilian police methods would have avoided anything. Not getting into the legal problems, but these were pretexts for the assault. But how many resources that the feds have at their disposal to waste to kill a few people? It's amazing to me.
Right, and of course the media is always there to get the exact image, into minds. But you see, I think it's unconstitutional just on the, on the onset, because you should not have federal agencies coming in to handle local police activity. I mean, this is completely incorrect. Mm-hmm. And now you've had a situation where at one point, you'd have to have a process to bring the feds in, right? Feds just couldn't come in to a small sovereign and show up and say, we're taking over the investigation, or we're going to be the ones to get the people out of the, out of some kind of hostage situation. But now the feds show up and that's it.
Yeah.
The locals just bail out. They go, well, it's been all that, we can't go against them. I mean, this is one area where local citizenry can work against the secret society. It's to demand that the local politicians simply stand up to the feds, to all of the different federal agencies, and say, look, you don't have any jurisdiction. And I know you think you do, but you don't. And so we want to have a legal process put into place that's public, that everyone can understand, that we can see who is the people making the decisions regarding this. If you actually do win this case, that really is something that the citizens should just absolutely demand, is that no more of this. The feds just show up whenever they want with them, and then work with the militarized police to batter the raw milk guy.
Yeah,
so that
heavily armed Amish farmers.
Exactly. So it's a. This is just, this is a time that the citizen needs to really defend democracy, not advocating violence. I do say, self-defense is appropriate, but you've got to find techniques that will basically create political resistance. And, getting to the idea of, because I get asked about this all the time, is they say, well, you've got, you have the militarized police, you've got all of these guys. Well, I've got my gun and I'm going to, by God, I'm not going to let anyone, interfere with me. Violence is just absolutely it isn't going to work, because you can't possibly defeat militarized police, and you can't, and if you start actually giving them pause, they'll bring in the aircraft support.
Yeah.
You'll just get the hell blown out.
Overwhelming firepower. Yeah.
Yeah. And the public won't understand violence in any case. They'll immediately think that it's reflective of unsound minds. So what you really need to do is to have responses to these things that create political understanding. We need to wake the public up. And so whenever these things occur, when you're, if you're in the middle of these melees, you just have to think about that, well, what really can be done with this thing to create a situation to get the public more awake.
Well, I think the problem is most people don't see themselves being at the other end of a gun being pointed by a SWAT team. But it can happen very easily, because particularly in the drug war, because often they just rely on these confident informants, and they give an address and then they violate all procedures, just go to the address. And this has happened a number of times. There's a terrible case of Corey May. He was a 21-year-old black guy living in Mississippi. He's living with his girlfriend and his daughter, and they had a little family going like a duplex in Mississippi. And I think it was the day after Christmas, his girlfriend was working night shift at like a chicken factory or something. And all of a sudden he hears a noise, people breaking in, and he has a gun, as is his right. And he's with his daughter, and he's lying down with her. She's like 18 months old or something. And he apparently hides under the bed and goes to the corner of the room with the gun. All of a sudden this guy bursts in, and it's dark, and he's all in black, and he shoots the guy. And he ended up being a police officer, and he killed him. Then, of course, the other assault members come in, other SWAT team comes in, they arrest him, beat him up, of course. And he's charged with capital murder of a police officer. And the state of Mississippi prosecuted him for capital murder, got a conviction. He was on death row for several years. Finally, a law firm took it, a very prominent law firm, I think in D.C., took his case. Well, what happened was, after 10 years or so, he pled out for, the prosecutor agreed to let him out under a manslaughter charge. They reduced the charge. But he's still a convicted felon. But the point is, just based on that case, they burst in this guy's house. It was the wrong address. He shoots them, the guy, in self-defense. Still, they get a jury to convict him. How... no-knock raids. From the history of no-knock raids, that's another thing. You have these SWAT teams with no-knock raids. These are inherently dangerous and violent situations. I don't care if it makes their job easier. That's not the point. The point is, they say, well, they might get rid of the drugs and all this. Yeah, but you're creating a situation which is not violent, and your law enforcement intervention is creating a violent situation. That's not what law enforcement is supposed to be. It's not what policing is supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, the no-knock stuff is... Oh man, I just think that you would have to have the most extreme reasons to permit this legally, right?
Yeah.
Because as you say, it just is. It's inherently dangerous, right? You set up situations where there's going to be, if someone does have a weapon in there, he's going to just immediately use it.
And they don't do the due diligence. They don't get the right address. They don't get intelligence on who's in there. What if there are children in the house?
Well, yeah. I mean,
it's a house in the middle of the night. Of course there can be children in the house in the middle of the night.
And this typically, I mean, as I have seen it, because there's stories all the time about the no-knock raid that goes wrong, yeah. Right? Once a week this happens. And as I've been exposed to these stories, it seems like they're almost always involved with the warrants involved with drug sales.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean... Here's a way to fix all this. Just legalize all the damn drugs.
Joe, you're putting a lot of people out of work.
Well, I know, but that's but I'm also getting a lot of people out of prison. Portugal legalized all drugs. I think it was 1998, my memory serves, but it was about 20 years ago. So now they have really good statistics, right? They've got almost a generation of this no criminalization for drug possession and drug sales too. I mean, you can't bring in like a ton of, you know, methadrine, but pretty much they don't prosecute. And when they developed this idea, and, you know, people were saying, "Oh, your community will go to hell in a handbasket." And the response was, "Well, we just can't afford both the interdiction and the prosecution and the incarceration. Portugal is a poor country and we can't afford it, so we're going to give it a shot." Mm-hmm. 20 years later, drug use is down from the baseline established. Down, right? Now, the savings have been extraordinary. I mean, just think, no incarceration, no interdiction, no arrest, all this process goes away. And what do they do with the money? The people who are addicts and have basically substance abuse issues now have clinics that are very well funded that can take care of them. There's no stealing in order to, you know, get your next heroin fix. The society is just much, much better. I was there a couple years ago and I actually talked. I was very interested in this, and I wasn't actually in Portugal. I was in Spain, and I got a chance to meet with Portuguese there. And they said, look, the culture is just dramatically better. And you know what? If we did the same thing here, the same result would happen. I think it would be more dramatic because, you know, when you take all like in African-American communities, some of the statistics are just incredible about the fraction of African-American males between 20 and 40 that are either incarcerated or on probation, right? It's just beyond belief. It's like half the population. Mm-hmm. So now none of these people are really candidates for family creation, are they?
No.
Right. So if we and because the selling of drugs is such a lucrative and the most easy access, lucrative field available for these guys, they all go to a life. So many of them go to life of crime just because it's what's available, you know. And I don't want to make excuses for them. I think they've been manipulated, but you don't want to make excuses. On the contrary, you want to challenge them and say, "Look, you've just got to be better than the people who indoctrinated you." Mm-hmm. You know, and so this is it's a message that I don't hear a lot among the black leaders. In fact, I never hear it except for a few people, black people that are typically friends of mine.
Well, the civil rights establishment has been bought out since the 1960s. The Urban League, NAACP, these have always been front organizations for the
oligarchs. Yeah, that's right. That's what I believe, is that, that they definitely got in and infiltrated all that stuff. So they control the leadership, and that thereby they control the message. So they typically create victimization memes, you know, where we're being wronged. They don't challenge the African American leaders don't challenge their constituents to be better than those that have indoctrinated them. Mm-hmm. You know, they never say, "Look, we've been taken off a cliff," and it would be a tough message. I mean, but it's one we've got to actually start giving them. I mean, if there's one thing that we can do, Tim, with our little show here, is to just encourage anyone who has a moment of communication with someone in the African American culture, young, particularly young males, but women as well, to say, you know, have you considered that this is all deliberate? That basically the rap culture, the drug culture, and the penal system are all part of the same thing, and it's all designed to take your culture into the abyss. And you know something, I'll tell you, there was an interesting quote from Alicia Keys. She's a black singer, and she was saying that you know, rap music was basically an invention of the government to make African-American males kill one another,
and the research bears that out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Death Row Records and the crack epidemic in the 1980s, CIA, Freeway Ricky Ross, Danielle Blandone, CIA agent, working with Freeway Ricky Ross, and that was exposed by Gary Webb. And this is sort of how, this is when you're talking about ending the drug. We can't simply end the drug wars. Catherine Austin Fitz says, whenever there's a group of mothers who wants to crack down on Tony Soprano, they immediately have James Bond coming down upon them. That's how she puts it, because the organized crime is connected to the intelligence agency, because it's an extension of organized crime. But they're just an adjunct or an agent of organized crime, of the intelligence agencies, rather.
Because, absolutely. And, you know, Tim...
Because the drugs play such a big part in the international finance, the banking system, and these things. It's also plays the part of gentrification, because if you can collapse a community with drugs and make money, at the same time, you take the money that's been made by selling the drugs, and you invest it in Fannie Mae stocks, which are then used to finance the gentrification of the neighborhood you just destroyed 10 years before. There's your business model. And that's what happened in the 90s with the Clinton administration. Under the Clinton administration in the 90s, the population of the country, the prison population almost doubled.
Yeah.
And that was all part of a program, one of the reinventing government plan, where they cracked down on drugs. And you'd have all this, of course, what that really translates is arresting a lot of poor black people who can't hire lawyers. And this fed the privatized prison population. And at the same time, they were targeting some of these neighborhoods for eventual gentrification that we saw a decade later. Really sinister stuff. And it
sounds,
but it's just the type of thing that a psychopath with an MBA would come up with, though.
Yeah, well, certain kinds of psychopaths.
Yeah.
I do shows from time to time. A friend of mine, a black guy who I actually have discussed this in open and in public with him. And, you know, I give the model of the P2 Lodge in Italy. And I say, look, Operation Gladio, I say, you want to give a template to young African-American males as to what happened to them, how they got here. Look at this whole mess with Operation Gladio, and look how the P2 Lodge basically is working hand in hand with the intelligence agencies. I mean, for God's sakes, three of the three heads of the different departments of the intelligence agencies in Italy were all part of the lodge, mm-hmm. right? They were actually named and listed on the documents, you know, that were finally exposed to the public when they found a whole cache of them. But my point is that this shows, because remember, the mafia is involved here as well. So you have the intelligence agencies, the mafia, and this high-level Freemasonry stuff, right? This is then working against the public with these false flags, which is really what the African-American community is victimized by.
Yes.
It's a false flag. But this is the model of what's happened to them. I mean, you know, I can't cite the lodge. I can't say the name of the individuals. But I know that the operation is exactly the same model. This is what's going on. You've got secret society coming up with ideas about how to basically create a more perfect slave state. And they work with organized crime and who are part of the same guild as the intelligence agencies. And so now that combination is undefeatable, particularly because they also control the media, which was also shown in the whole P2 Lodge mess with Operation Gladio, that the media was complicit.
Yeah, and he became prime minister eventually. Silvio.
Exactly, but Bertolone, he ends up being prime minister, so they can't even stop them after the fact because the media, you know, soft sells what they've done. So anyway, this is what I would give to an African-American male who was, you know, questioning, well, how could this happen? What do you mean I have been – the whole culture that I exist in is basically a weapon against me. I would say this is what's been done. This is a false flag. The rap music, the blaxploitation film, the welfare society single mom, the CIA's production of the drugs that somehow the police can never stop from getting into your community. They can sure as hell arrest, you know, you when you start to sell the stuff, but somehow they can never quite stop cocaine. You know, just an example. I was in LA the other day and I was talking to a guy and I said, what's Coke selling for? He goes, man, it's never been cheaper. Mm-hmm. I go, really? He goes, oh, man, it's like it's you can get crack almost for nothing. And I was thinking, wow, we spent like $1 trillion and, you know, trying to prevent this stuff. And here it is. You know, anyone can get it basically at this really cheap price. Well, this suggests to me that we're not really trying to stop it from getting into these communities. Right. The only real law enforcement that's going on is when, you know, as we throw the blacks and whites and Latinos into prison, where they are then part of the prison culture. This is the education that they're being given. Then they're put back on out on the street, so violent, and of course with a prison record for drug sales. I mean, what is that individual's future? Well, the future is violence.
Yeah.
And this was the Operation Gladio. It's the Operation, you know, Snoop Doggy Dog, that you know, and then they put characters like Snoop Doggy Dog and you know, all these gangster raps as models and role models and heroes. It's all part of the way that they're creating the meme, you know, the black violence. And, you know, the response, well, my God, we've got to have another fascist mobile delivered to, you know, some little community that's only got a bunch of dairy farmers in it.
Yeah, it's dangerous if you try to break up this operation. I interviewed, what's his name? He wrote the book about Tupac Shakur. Name fails me now.
Yeah, I know you're talking about. Yeah.
There's a theory that his death was set up because he was actually working with the Crips and the Bloods to end the violence, to stop dealing guns and drugs. And that was no good because you're messing up someone's business model there, business plan.
Sure.
And because they need the violence, the market for the guns and the drugs.
You know, when you go to the root of the Crips and the Bloods and mm-hmm. all of these little, you know, different street gangs, I think you'll find almost every single time at the core, you'll see government activity.
Yeah. Yeah. Same with the Klan.
I know this is a strange thing to say, but that's my belief. I think it's just these things are absolutely artificial. They may be legitimate as they onset, as they get started, but then they quickly, the government realizes, wait a second, this is terrific. Let's get the Crips and the Bloods. There's violence. The police will be the public will be demanding more fascist mobiles. And so we are basically in a, it's not Operation Gladio, it's Operation Gladiatorial Pit, mm-hmm. where we're just being rammed into each other. You know, and this was the same thing that happened to the ethnic neighborhoods, you know, in the 50s, where they would bring up African Americans. They used them basically as kind of cultural Marxist battering rams.
Yeah.
To shatter the ethnic communities, push them out into the suburbs. It was all designed.
Well, I mean, if anything, what was exposed, I mean, this was exposed in the 70s when the Office of Economic Opportunity under Sergeant Shriver gave almost $1 million to the Blackstone Rangers in Chicago just to raise hell and chase out the, I think it was the Polish, I forget if it was Polish or Ukrainians, the whites out of the neighborhoods. And almost $1 million to this criminal outfit. And you also you had the scandal of the community block grant things and going to the criminal gangs. The government was funding all these things. That wasn't just incompetence and government. There was malevolence there, and that's the same thing
design.
As funding.
It was Operation Gladiatorial Pit.
It's the same thing as funding ISIS in Syria or Libya. It's the same strategy. You know,
yeah. I mean, basically, we're just living in this theater of the absurd where. Yeah. The secret society is controlling media and the intelligence agencies, and through that, they control street culture.
And I do think that what you're saying there, as far as the Crips and the Bloods having some sort of intelligence or police origins or support, I believe that was at least suggested in the Rampart scandal in L.A., wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah. It was.
So it was revealed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That was the first time I ever saw it. Well, I mean, it was the whole Vacaville, you know, MK Ultra business, which ends up with the SLA, is the model, right? Mm-hmm. This was the model. And even the Black Panthers. I mean, you look at all of the connections between these guys and the CIA. It just seems almost impossible not to think that this wasn't being, you know, manipulated into existence.
Oh, I mean, I think they were radicalized or militarized by by government, Asian provocateurs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They take self-help groups, or, you know, I don't know what the designation is, but they find a way to radicalize them. They find a way to use them to get them to act out violently. And then, plays.
Then they shoot them like Freddie Hampton, right? They assassinate
them. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, the poor, you know, they're, again, it's just, you know, the model to give these people is, you know, the false flag and Gladio and how they manipulate culture to create terrorism. I would give that model to all of the alt-right guys that are trying to basically foment violence. I would give that model to all of, you know, Black Lives Matters that are, you know, have really violent promotions, you know, in their speech and you know, what they're going to do and stuff. And I don't know how to do it, Tim, but I wish to God when the next time there is when they maneuver the Black Lives Matters to be next to a Ku Klux Klan group, it would sure be wonderful to have someone, you know, with a bullhorn saying, attention, people, you've been manipulated.
Yeah. Well, you know. Here's an example of this. I just had a talk last week, recorded an interview, and we were talking about McGeorge Bundy, how he went from the CFR, went to the he was an advisor to Kennedy, LBJ, CIA guy. Then he went to the Ford Foundation, and the Ford Foundation funded the integrationist elements of the civil rights movement, and also the Black Power elements of the civil rights movement. And why would they be funding both sides like that? And there was a speech, I think it was Stokely Carmichael, who coined the phrase Black Power. And when he said it, he didn't quite know what he was saying because he was told to say that. Now, obviously, the other side of Black Power is what? White fear.
Of course.
White fear. And that's the dialectic there. And so you have all these, here you have this Rockefeller connected, CIA connected, you know, Ford Foundation funding these radical groups to create the turmoil. And McGeorge Bundy said an interesting thing. He said he decided to back the civil rights movement after reading An American Dilemma by Gunnar Myrdal. Now, I don't know if you actually read it. No one's actually read the entire book. It's like 1,200 pages long. But, you know, it turns out that Gunnar Myrdal probably didn't write that book because he was only in the country for 8 months in 1940 or something. He went back during World War II to his home country. But the funny thing about the book says, I think McGeorge Bundy said that, you know, his job was to preserve democracy and solve the civil rights problem. But the problem with the American Dilemma was, the main thesis was that, why it was an American Dilemma was that America was an irredeemably racist country, and we couldn't rely on the legislative process, the democratic process to solve the race issues. We had to rely on judicial activism, which is anti-democratic.
Yeah. you can pretty directly trace this stuff back to the Frankfurt School.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the Frankfurt School's development of critical theory, racism was an absolutely key component of critical theory, of how they were going to break down Western civilization. It was always in play as a weapon. It was never being promoted by the intelligence agencies that were working with the Frankfurt School,
mm-hmm.
who come to the United States, to try to promote harmonious relationships between the races. That is preposterous. It was done to destroy the culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to shatter Western civilization. And this was that there is nothing that has been, I think, more effective. I think racism has even been more effective than feminism. You know?
Yeah, it's they're very similar in many ways. They're based on some base of real grievances, real problems.
Sure. Well.
Yeah, but they're not addressed. They're created just to stir up and aggravate those differences, aggravate those problems.
But it's just you can directly trace. And they would actually, in their writings, you know, actually describe that racism is just this great tool that when we go against Western civilization, we can roll out it will have tremendous psychological impact. They aren't doing this to because they want to make a better society. They're doing this to destroy society.
And what's interesting is the role that sexual promiscuity plays in all this.
Sure.
Because obviously with music, jazz, and also subsequently with rock and roll used to mean fornication, that by the same time you're promoting race or feminism, you're promoting sexual promiscuity or sexual license. And the understanding, the deep understanding of human nature that requires, because that's where you destroy the community, that's where you destroy the family, and you cause it to disintegrate. Because without family, without these institutions that nurture and develop the next generation and build community, it just dissolves, it breaks apart, it explodes. And that's precisely what occurred in the 1960s.
Yeah, well, look at the insane and bogus Freudian theories. Right.
Yeah.
About, you know, this kind of plumbing mechanism in the brain that gets clogged up if you don't have enough sexuality, that, then kind of merges with cultural Marxism with people like Marcuse, and you get polysexualism, you know, where just have sex with anything you want. What are you afraid of? There's nothing to worry about. So this is all part of how they're attacking culture. We're being attacked basically everywhere. You know, the whole culture has now been weaponized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know? And the military police are just there to mop up the, the dregs that they anticipate will exist after they've finished basically getting rid of marriage completely. And family completely, and ethnic pride and ethnicities completely, because all these things were on the chopping block to the cultural Marxists. And then look at, just so that people can understand what's, you know, how clear all this is, you know, you have the Frankfurt School, which then is basically hired by the American Jewish Committee to produce the authoritarian personality, where you get all the crazy, you know, like the fascist scale and the authoritarian personality scale. You got all this psychological science, right, that's being directed against Christian culture. You've got, like, Marcuse. Now, Marcuse is working in the OSS.
Yes.
Wait a second. OSS? I mean, this is a guy that was being funded by an organization that starts out in the Comintern. How does he... Where does this come about, this OSS business? Right?
Are you suggesting the Cold War was a false dialectic?
I mean, don't get me started, but yeah, I am actually. I do think it was just something that was, of course.
Yes.
So, you know, all the world's a stage. Mm-hmm. The secret society has taken over the media. So where are we? Well, one place we aren't is where we think we are. You know, or where the media tells us. All of these things are nonsense. They're all just, you know, propaganda devices.
At least the secret society hasn't taken over the Emmys. I can watch that with good wholesome entertainment.
Are the MTV award shows?
Yeah, MTV award, Teen Choice Awards.
There's another freedom, you know, here, like sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is just how I want to, you know, live my life, fighting against the man, you know, for my individual. And then it is individual, because when you get to the be 45-year-old and you're in the single bar, then you really are doing your own thing, because you have absolutely nothing, you know. So, you know, the black violence is, you know, very difficult problem. It's a very real problem. People who live near these individuals, you know, have every right to be frightened.
Yeah, but I talk to a lot of white suburbanites. They don't understand what blacks face with police, because they think that they're all criminals. But, and to a certain extent, the police presence and the behavior is a result of, you know, the criminal behavior. At the same time, and they kind of dismiss the militarization of the police. Also, at the same time, if you talk to so-called black leaders or people who talk about these things, is when they talk about police violence, which is a significant, a serious issue, they don't talk about the high rates of crime among black men in their own community. And not just, you know, calling police pigs. It's the misogynist attitudes they have in the music.
Yeah,
you know, these things. And this is a serious problem, too. I mean, they're both serious problems. They both exist. And how do you deal with these two problems? Like, we started this conversation tonight, is these two problems have been created by malevolent forces. And that's what has to be recognized here. It isn't just, again, this isn't history unfolding. This isn't just, you know, bureaucracies going, behaving the way they do, chasing money. That's a part of it. It's a part of culture. Because I think you pointed out this. Once you start, you can push culture in a certain direction and it has its own momentum. You don't have to do everything. It's like the CIA doesn't have to import all the drugs. It doesn't have to sell all the drugs. It doesn't have to make all the music. Because they've been able to, you know, to corrupt the culture and get the process rolling. You know,
yeah, and,
you know,
and make sure it doesn't. There's no, people are not able to stop it. You know, and that's the thing, is these projects are designed to sweep useful idiots into the net, and then they just carry on the activity on their own.
I mean, when I'm on the street, and I'm confronted with some youths who look, doubtful, their demeanor, I become guarded because I'm streetwise. That doesn't make me a racist. You could say I'm a sexist because I don't feel the same way if they're females. So you could say, am I being a sexist or a racist? I don't know. But that's just honest. I'm just, you can tell by demeanor.
Absolutely. And people should always honestly express that.
Yeah.
And they should try to find a way to reach individuals in the African American community who will listen to the message and say, look, you know, this culture that you are inside of is a deliberate construction. It is destroying you, and it is also destroying us.
Mm-hmm.
We have to work to try to transform and to make the culture basically head back to where it was in 1950. Now, you know, how to do this? Well, we have to try to find a way to reach those, you know, the class of African-American males specifically that are not so succumbed to the rap music culture,
mm-hmm.
that have some awareness that this seems like the whole thing is going in the wrong direction. Try to reach them. Try to promote them as leaders in the African-American community, because that's where we can become better than the secret society, than the cultural Marxists, you know, than the CIA. We can become better than they are. We can simply use, you know, our capacity to reason and an awareness to try to head in a better direction. So, you know, how actually to do that, Tim? Well, I mean, man, it's a big subject. We'll have to tackle that one on another show, huh?
Yeah. So, okay, well, that's about it for tonight.
Hey, Tim, thank you, brother, so much. Okay. You know, we'll be in touch shortly.
Okay, take care. Enjoy your weekend.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.